So I'm going to read a few poems from my new book, which is called Autobiographical Fiction. I'm quite colorblind, but someone told me that my sweater is the same color as the cover, so I was delighted to do that. This poem is called Ballast Disordered, for an Argument with Mr. Stevens. Alice cried beyond the genius of the burbs. Her hair was never blonde. Uttered word by word on video, can death be the mother of beauty? My love, she runs a red, red hose. She doesn't stop to blow her nose. There is nothing more fake than lyrics. There is nothing to like less than song. The impulse to flutter figures of speech dies faster than Schoenberg's multi-tone wrongs. My love has got a perfect nose. There is nothing I love more than that. And Humbert kidnapped an underage nymph who lacked a vestige of taste. Alice cried oceans, paparazzi shot stars, just the place for a lake. I've sent now twice. That should make an entourage spin. Say hot three times, then you're thin. When Woodrow Wilson went to war, he told the papers what to say. No one has to do that now. The talking heads already know, and the war continues in foreign dreams. My mother had a waspish waist. She never raged for order. I weep for you, the last pap said. I deeply blondifies. My love is like a red, red song, the way she plucks my lyric hair. I wish to stress that this video does not endorse occult belief, but due to my personal convictions, the words might mean just what they, while war continues, anyhow. This is a convenience store in the North End, and it's about something awful that happened in the North End of Winnipeg several years ago. But when I was coming here from Toronto on the train today, I got a Facebook message from Max Layton, who is one of Irving Layton's sons, and he had just read my book, said various nice things about it, and then I remembered that there's one poem in the book, which is this one, that mentions his dad, and the speaker in the poem, talks about touching Irving Layton's ass. So I immediately became very anxious. What does Irving Layton's son think about that? And what he thought was, it was no problem because I'd mentioned his name. So fortunately he has a sense of humor. A convenience store in the North End after Allen Ginsberg. And there's an epigraph from the National Post story in 2010 about this incident. Kwang Soo Kim, 62, is accused of striking 29-year-old Geraldine Beardy for allegedly stealing food from his OK grocery store in Winnipeg's North End. Ms. Beardy slipped into a coma in hospital and died 5 days later. Shopping for why, she came from somewhere north, a reserve, we say, but reserved for what? My country, not yet angelic. I did not see Layton, and will he condemn me from over the black waters if I did touch his ass once? Nor did anyone ask what a can of click cost. There's a crack addict in the candy aisle. Nearby, a steeple rises, and an old white man repairs the fence. The addict thanks me for holding the door. Across the OK aisle, he's looking down, blind old man. Grab a can of click, hell, why not two, stuffed jacket. And now the fridge, a sandwich. I look across the okay aisle. He's gone, he's gone. I straighten, noise behind, and red on my shoulders. Straighten, fall, red on my head. Fucking hell, fall, and blows, flatten, sandwich, wet, and face, okay, floor. Like Mr. Kim, I came here from somewhere else. Hell, he asked me, did I live around? No, I don't. Just driving through the lost Canada of love. And Tommy Douglas, knifing William Blake. Kim's cheerful, like me. He'd never give anyone a smallpox blanket. And he's right. The weather is great. Yeah, punctuation. When I was a bachelor briefly in my 30s, I had a poster of Posh Spice on my wall. So this poem is for Posh Spice. It's called The Unchanging Nature of Beauty. And it has three parts. One, the chauffeur walks her from the rolls at six, alone in back and immaculate as she enters the yard. But the kids pitch muck from puddles, white collapsing on her white frock. She does not let them see her cry in her room each day. At night, she rubs her smooth brow. She knows she has beauty inside. Highly commended on ballet exams, she chooses fame after seeing fame. Like Whitman, she feels the future touching her through the page. This book holding like a martyr's grip. Two, like Ovid, she knows how beauty is best preserved. It does not depend on being young or on large sunglasses. She doesn't know who David is, but learns the graceless game of spitting heroes on the pitch. The horror of that walk from the VIP lounge, and the awful press. She does read books to the kids. The worst mistake is too much makeup. Ovid recommends pounding moist poppies and rubbing them on your cheeks. Girls preen to please themselves, and David is a beautiful man, long and blonde in perfect places. Three, in Salmo, Ovid's statue stands upon a book, proves he could read with his feet. Performing magic with his feet is also David's job. David is the most tidy person in the world, says Victoria, dirty words chasing her from the limo. And this is a short poem about another woman I admire, Emily Dickinson. I am Emily Dickinson, tabloid journalist. She saw her own funeral on video while to and fro the blonde celebrity kept stalking Finn as heroine. The love of fame makes fickle curves that throw the paparazzi into fits to capture cameos of immortal blondity. But M did not die for her waist. Her manager let her waste her talent holding time's ungodly curve. After great sex, formal thinking thins the flat screen. Waist management was her business. She sang with nerve of housewives reel. She died for beauty and a shade of blonde just this side of questionable taste. Her dying words breathe bony thin, a loaded sound, chagrin. This is called Fred Engels and My Teenage Uncle in Different Fields at Different Times. The earth a slaughterhouse, red snow like the grape juice at Auxerre in 48, left on the street Herr Engels cuts across the field where his mistress Mary waits, white arms open, holding the bottle she already tastes. But the greatest pleasure he knows is not training for revolution or how she will please him tonight, but fox hunting, blood sport in the field, his horse above the hedge, landing on snow, playing with millocrats. The cotton spins into the night, and the god-ridden capitalists leave the fields bare. He's a godless millionaire. Children drink cheap schnapps in the open streets. At night, when Mary eats tipsy cake, drinks ale, she says, "I'll never leave you alone again. I'll never weep like those young women do." Does she know when he clutches for her at night that history is a snow goddess who walks on corpses in a red, red field? Before the fall of bourgeois snow, he feels bored, puts his hand into her cleft. They drink Chateau Margaux all night, the bottle open on her lap. She seals his reach with just one kiss. The left's tedious scruples do not bother him in the dark. This sleeping French girl knows nothing about him, lying splayed in the field. He sees the snow left purple with the dye of the cotton mills belching at night. The reactionary victims would not know, even after the melt, that dialectical materialism was a field whose crop only grew at night. For example, my uncle knew they buried all the bodies after dark, after 45. He'd never tasted Chateau Margaux or considered the angel of history. Digging was hard, too, in Siberia, in frozen earth. My uncle used a blowtorch to warm the grave. He had trained as a mechanic. Now he fixed a simpler problem: open heat on permafrost. I'll read two more. This is the first poem in the book. It's called "The Impassioned Ex-Formalist Pulitzer Prize-Winning Womanizing Alcoholic Jumps Off a Bridge." So, of course, it's about John Berryman. And it's in two parts. One, he never noticed where his body lived. His father's name was Smith, and in the cold on the beach, he found his dad, gun beside him, body doubled. The memory of a lovely fuck lay gaudy in his mind. Oh, painfully, he hummed the issue of his name, "No joke, pal." In Minneapolis, the purple rain falls cold. The doubling of his father's death, no joke. He lifted his eyes unto the empty hills. He scrawled on white napkins and pencil, naming the pain of each drink. Then his perfect memory lay on the cold flats. Predeceased by beloved Delmore, that name like a seedy hotel, or killing pain on the way to work. Towards Mark Twain's river, his body rolled. In his pocket was a check with his name. His body broken on the cold bank. He died in winter, frozen dive. Two. On the other bank, the construction crane's elegance. I see you perching on the railing's edge. I see that tacky M painted on the bridge. Back home, I sit on the 20th floor and think what divorce will cost me. I told a lie. What art and Nazis do is name, order, stay untroubled by the Russian cold. I can't approach the edge. I'm scared of heights. Yet how much love I feel for you. In the taxi's artificial cold, the driver scans my credit card. Small price for my quick glance down, as painless as your wave to the worker before you jumped pills would save you now from that long drop. In a double grave at Resurrection Cemetery, you recite, for malt does less than Milton can to justify for Kate, Eileen, Mistress B and C, the pain of being stuck in a body. And before I read the last poem, I would be, of course, happy to sign one of these books for you after we're finished the evening. And this poem is called Leaving, and it's dedicated to my oldest son, Jeremy. Last night I left you in a field of snow with a D minor wind blowing up stage left. The howling wind was angry. It said, no, not even London Drugs stayed open. I dreamed of pigs squealing, and in the night sirens sang far from the industrial field. Last night I packed. The clock was slow, and my mind was just on leaving. You slept and did not know how soon I'd leave you in the open snow. I dreamed of flying like a crow that night, and you looked pixel dense, unreal. You cried, and someone saw. They knew your loneliness in the locked car I'd left for an errand, left the window open. That hot day they pulled down Lennon in daylight on TV, that day or night of guilty knowledge, and you awoke. It was no time to leave or dream of CNN and Lennon's rope. It was just a parking lot, I know, another barren field, not a place to grieve. The snow was wrong, and most of what I know.